This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
Hello. Welcome to Startup to Success with Maria. I'm so excited about my guest today, William Craig Reed, who's the New York Times bestselling author of several award-winning books, including The 7 Secrets of Neuron Leadership, Red November, and The Spies of the Deep. He holds an MBA certifications in marketing and leadership and a neuroscience certification from Harvard University. Reed, I mean, your background, I can go on and on and on. So I want to give you an opportunity to share everything, but I am so thrilled to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for joining. I can't wait to dive in. And I have so many questions for you, but the first one that I want to start with is your transition from U.S. Navy submariner and a diver to a New York Times best-selling author. That's quite remarkable. Tell me how that journey was.
Mostly by accident, but my father, when he was alive, was an author, and quite a good one. He wrote more historical nonfiction. In fact, one of his books was ghostwritten for the movie director John Huston.
Oh, wow.
Directed Moby Dick and Night of the Iguana and so forth. They met each other in Puerto Vallarta and played poker together. So I learned my writing skills and got some of my initial desires in relation to the writing profession from my father. And also, he encouraged me to go into the Navy. He was a naval officer.
Wow.
And retired. And so that spurred me toward that career path. And while I was in the Navy, I found that I was writing more in a diary sort of fashion about some of the things that we were doing. We couldn't talk about them, and I didn't think I'd ever be able to talk about them. So I decided to confidentially write them down. And then later, that turned into some of the things I wrote about in Red November.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. So you also launched three successful startups that got acquired by Intel, NetApp, and Helios, and helped a dozen other firms achieve similar successes. Can we dive a little bit into that? Because that's a lot. When I thought of all the things you've accomplished, I'm just like, wow, this is so inspiring. Like, how did you even make the time?
Wasn't easy, trust me. But I think one of the more interesting aspects was one of the startups was actually doing quite well. We were in the Bay Area. This was a number of years ago. And we had headed down the path and we're ready to get what's called a Series B investment. That's the next round. And had some good success in customers. And Warburg Pincus, which at the time was one of the largest investment firms in the world, had given us a term sheet. They were ready to ink the deal.
Wow.
Flew out to our offices on a Monday morning, walked in the door, and they came from New York. And on the big screen in our lobby were two burning buildings in downtown New York. This was 9/11. They walked into the building. So they're on the phone trying to get home, trying to make sure everyone they know is okay. And the following Monday morning, they said, we'd still like to invest in you, but we can't. We're all shut down. We don't know if it's a day, a week, or a year.
Right.
So we took an acquisition offer from another company, Helios. And so instead of hitting a home run, we hit a single. But those things happen. That's just the way it works in the entrepreneurial world.
Wow, that's incredible. Great story. Let's talk a little bit about leadership and neuroscience. So in your book, The 7 Secrets of Neuron Leadership, you blend leadership with neuroscience. What led you to explore this unique intersection? And how do you think understanding neuroscience can enhance leadership skills in the business world?
Well, after not getting invested by Warburg Pincus, with two partners, launched a consulting organization, sales and marketing consulting organization. We had a number of blue chip clients, some well-known companies from Cisco to HP, SAP, Visa, and so forth. And we worked with fairly large sales and marketing organizations, sometimes many thousands of salespeople and tens of thousands of channel partners. And we frequently needed to recruit people in order to have consultants for these organizations. We had 13 or 14 badged individuals in the building at SAP, for an example. But then we also had to work with a lot of different personalities, people within these organizations. And at that time, one of our clients was HP. They were getting involved with neuromarketing, which had to do with neuroscience. So that's when I started getting interested in that topic, researched it more, see how we could use that for the business side of the fence and what we were doing. And that also showed me some things not only related to sales and marketing, but also people. They're the people factor and how that related to getting the right people in the right seats and making sure we could work with individuals who were having some difficulty in some situations. That opened my eyes to the fact that this is a topic that really hadn't been talked about or written about. And that spurred me to start looking into writing my neuroscience books.
I have a question that I think can answer a personal struggle that I'm going through as we speak. How did you narrow down to, obviously you saw the need while you were consulting and you saw the problem and you decided to dive in and write the book to find the solution in a sense, right? Did you ever come across moments where you were interested in a few different topics and you had a hard time solidifying which to choose? I'm literally going through that as we speak, where I'm interested in several different topics and I know I have to choose my lane. I can't be a thought leader in these three different things because they're somewhat related, but they're not. So I would love your advice on that.
Absolutely. It is sometimes difficult to narrow in and focus. And one of the things that I actually talk about in my Seven Secrets of Neuroscience book is in relation to decision-making and actually utilizing three different parts of your brain. What we've discovered just over the past decade in the organization that I'm with today, remotely me, we have a PhD neuroscientist on our team. He's the one that forced me to get that neuroscience cert from Harvard so I could understand what he's saying. Didn't help a lot. But in any case, what I did learn is that even though some individuals might have half a brain, we know who they are. Most of us have three parts of our brain, the more logical, emotional, instinctual. And here's what's interesting. We make 90% of our decisions in our emotional, instinctual brains. Wow. That's really fascinating. And not in our logical brain. We smell that new car leather, all the logic goes out the door. So in my book, what I do is to talk about how to engage your logical neocortex part of your brain a little bit more for the decision-making factors. And that helps you to then not just be looking at things emotionally, instinctually, and making your decisions only based on those factors, but to engage more of the logical, try to get to at least the 20% range, if not higher. And that helps you to narrow down those choices. You can start to see what are the pluses. We all have that sheet with the pluses and minuses. This takes it much further and starts to look at, from a brain-centric viewpoint, how to better make those kinds of decisions.
Can you repeat the book? Just for the audience to make sure they go grab it, because that's really helpful. And it's a different way to take, I usually do the pros and cons, but that's a whole different way to look at things.
You bet. It's called The Seven Secrets of Neuron Leadership.
Amazing. And it's available everywhere. Okay. Awesome. So let's dive into your entrepreneurial success stories. So you've successfully launched three startups that were acquired by major corporations. Can you share some key strategies or lessons you learned during these entrepreneurial ventures that might be valuable for our listeners who are entrepreneurs or inspiring to be entrepreneurs?
You bet. In addition to those three, as a consultant for the consulting firm that I work with, which eventually became an Inc. 5000 consulting firm, by the way, quite successful.
Wow.
We had several startups that we worked with that were also funded and acquired, one by VMware, one by Samsung, and some others. And in all of these cases, the key is your team. Now, when startups are trying to get funded, that's really the number one thing that venture capitalists or investors will look at is your team. Do you have the right people in the right seats? And it's difficult for us personally to admit that maybe we don't, or we should get some others. And the organization I'm with now, Remotely Me, we focus on that. And that's where the science within my books now takes another step into actual reality, a software solution for this. What we've been using in the past are these text-based assessments that were invented 50 to 80 years ago. And remember I mentioned that we've got three parts of our brain, logical, emotional, instinctual? Well, our logical brain likes text and numbers, whereas emotional and instinctual brains like visual elements. So these text-based tests that take 45 minutes, they only have a 30% completion rate and only about maybe a 65% validity. Don't help us get the right people in the right seats. That's your first step. If you wanted to have success, get funded, get acquired, you have to build the right team, not only your leadership team, but the right team in general. And that requires doing some kind of an assessment. We've so many times, and we've seen this in field studies, people can dazzle you on an interview. They have tremendously good communication skills. But now what's most critical are trust factors and the right soft skills. So you have to understand the 8 key soft skills, and do they have the right soft skills, but also trust factors? Will they fit right in their organization? The only way to discern that is with the right data. And the only way to do that is with a test that uses visual neuroscience elements and not just text.
Wow. Now, is this something that could be available for a startup to utilize to assess properly?
Yes, without question. It's called the CQ assessment. Only takes 9 minutes. Others take about 45 minutes. So again, our brains process things 60,000 times faster. And it uses this really cool visual neuroscience. So it uses video, and where your eyes track, either to the left or right or in the middle of the video, can tell us which part of your brain is more dominant. Because we now know from neuroscience that we may have more neurochemicals or neurotransmitters that are a bit more dominant. So our neocortex or our limbic system or whatever it is might be a little more dominant in terms of our decision-making. Mm-hmm. And this can be uncovered now with the right approach. And so this helps us to be able to say, based upon this person's answers, we know this part of their brain is a little more dominant. Therefore, their soft skill balances are such, and they would make the best engineer, or this person would make the best salesperson.
That's incredible.
This is something we weren't able to do even 10 years ago, let alone 50 to 80 years ago, when the more popular, call them personality tests, were invented.
That's incredible. Sometimes people think it's not even just the employer knowing the skill sets, if you're potential employees or the team are a good fit for certain positions. But a lot of times these people themselves don't know. They assume that they might be good at this job, especially if they're trying to go to a whole different level. And then they get in and they find out that they're not really a good fit. And so this could be good for individuals to take on for their own sake, just to figure out, are they on the right path? Are they choosing and working in the career, the right career path. Let's talk a little bit about Remotely Me. I'm fascinated by that, by the way. As a board member of Remotely Me, a leading company in ChatGPT neuroscience and personalization for recruiting and sales, what are your thoughts on the future of AI in these fields? How do you see AI evolving in the context of enhancing human decision-making in business? Sorry, that was questions in one.
That's right. So we'll have to answer both. Aside from the fact that we're seeing some shakeup in these ChatGPT companies, it's amazing that we're seeing billions and billions spent for these organizations, and yet they're not even ready. One of them doesn't even have an API yet to connect in. And the other one now, even as I speak this morning, is down.
Right.
They're overrun. So even though you have all these funds, we can't seem to quite get there. That comes back to the right people in the right seats. Mm-hmm. If you have the right people in the right seats and the right leadership, these problems are things that you've thought about long before. Our chief technology officer is a Lean Six Sigma black belt. He just shakes his head. It's like this. We knew this back in the 50s when Deming went to Japan and said, here's how your process is right. There's just no excuse for it. And that's really the problem we're trying to solve. It's really huge. And it is a $9 trillion industry problem that is related directly to high stress and low trust.
Wow.
And Gallup's 2023 State of the Workplace report just blew everybody away. 80% of us don't trust our employers. Therefore, almost 80% are disengaged. 18% to the point they actually harm their companies. It's pretty serious. Whereas Deloitte came out with a study around the same time. Hey, if we can get to high trust organizations, we get 400% more performance, 88% more customer loyalty, 79% more productivity.
That's incredible.
That's what's been missing. No one's been able to measure trust or help you figure out how to increase it. It's directly related to a brain chemical called oxytocin. If it's high, we trust. If it's low, we don't. So we have to measure that and then help people increase that. And there's 10 cool ways to do that, by the way.
Do you want to share it?
So I'll share a couple of them. I'd love to get all 10. But one of those is what we call challenge stress.
Okay.
And that's, for example, let's say we have a team inside of our company. We might have a fundraising challenge. Hey, we all want to raise some funds for this really worthy charity. And you have three or four teams that are competing with each other. It's friendly competition. It raises cortisol in the brain, which is a stress hormone, but it's minor. And it also raises oxytocin. Another way is storytelling. When we do storytelling properly through a three-act play, for example, and I clearly outline this in my Start With Who book, how to do it, you again raise cortisol, but you also do it in a specific way. And there's certain things you can do within the storytelling elements that will raise the oxytocin. Now, you ready for the third one?
Yes.
Cool. Right? Cheese. I'm not making this up. Okay, cheese. There are certain types of cheese, like a good manchego, aged parmesan.
My favorite cheese.
And I'll tell you why. There's a tyrosine crystal, tyrosine crystals in these types of cheeses. And tyrosine is one of the 9 amino acids found in oxytocin. So it not only raises dopamine, it also raises oxytocin in your brain. And oxytocin is directly related to trust. It's also called the hug molecule or the happy molecule because it increases your happiness quotient. So if you don't like the crappy snacks in your break room, put in a cheese platter.
Wow, that's an amazing takeaway. That's incredible. Cheese, especially manchego, my favorite. Thank you for that. Now, what do you think the impact of AI could be in You know, I personally see the impact in my industry. I own a media buying advertising agency, and we used to hire a lot of copywriters for our radio ads and streaming and audio and podcast advertising. And we stopped doing it recently because we're able to use ChatGPT, the paid version, and submit all the best copies. Well, to be quite honest with you, we're able to submit reports based on the A/B testing on different copies that we've had. And then we ask ChatGPT to compile or just come up with a new copy, a refreshed copy, or five different versions of a copy that is utilizing the best performing copy. And so, unfortunately, as much as I do want to give my copywriters work, ChatGPT is doing it better.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.